Okay, Killian, say this is the One Step Above podcast. The One Step Above podcast. Say welcome to the show. We appreciate you listening. Yeah? Welcome to the One Step Above podcast, everybody. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the One Step Above podcast. I'm your host, Michael McKnight. Today's guest is a friend of mine who I've known for about 3 or 4 years. I met her when I first started working at Altra Footwear. She became an athlete for Altra, and to this day, she still runs for Altra. And if I'm wrong on that, she can correct me when she comes in. But her name is Maggie Guterl, so please join me in welcoming her to the show. Maggie, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
So you're in Durango. I know that much, but tell us a little bit more about you, specifically what you're doing in Durango, because you just recently moved there.
Yeah, I moved 2 Aprils ago. Luckily, it was 2 Aprils ago, because that would have been really weird to move in April, to work with Tailwind Nutrition. And so they're located in Durango, and it's, you know, southwest corner of Colorado. So it's pretty isolated, but it's near Silverton, which is where the Hard Rock 100 starts. So that's like a good reference for everyone, because people will say, oh, I'm in Denver or Boulder, and like, I want to visit you. And I'm like, cool, it's a 6-hour drive.
Yeah, perspective. Colorado's a big state.
Yeah.
And then tell us where you came from. I know you came from the flatlands, specifically.
Yeah. But it's a sea level area, but it wasn't flat, that's for sure. It's in Pennsylvania. There's a girl I work with at Tailwind named Morgan, who grew up in Durango. She grew up in like a lot of different West Coast states, but she thinks that Pennsylvania is like hill country or something, like hill people. Like me and this other girl, Abby, come from Pennsylvania. So she's a pretty hillbilly view of Pennsylvania, but I grew up near Philadelphia, so it's like a suburb.
Okay, and if I remember right, you were close to Bethlehem too, right?
Yeah, like an hour or so, give or take. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the reason I asked that is that's where the Runner's World festival has always been. So
yeah,
I guess it wasn't that flat. I remember there were some good hills out there, but compared to Durango, it's flat, right?
Yeah, the hills there are rolling, so you just get, it's like up and down. It's pretty relentless, like, but you can find a nice flat areas. Yeah, whereas here, there's only a couple of places I go to run where it's like flat.
It's hard to find the flat, right?
Yeah, and I mean, it's funny because my coach, Michelle Yates, like lives in Colorado, and she would give me run up this hill, 20-minute hill repeat, run up a hill for 20 minutes. I'm like, where am I going to find a 20-minute hill? That's insane. And here it's like, yeah, you could run up a hill for 2 hours. So
you're pretty lucky. That place is spectacular, except I have a little beef with Durango because that's where my shoes were stolen.
Yeah, that sucks. I mean, I don't know. I didn't think we had like a ton of, I mean, there's crime everywhere, but like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's a bunch of homeless people, but maybe it was just some kids or something. It's more likely kids. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't mean to blame the homeless people. It probably wasn't them.
I just blame the Super 8 motel parking lot. I guess that's just not the motel for me anymore.
yeah, that sucks.
But cool. So yeah, Maggie, let's take a quick revisit into your racing past. When we first met, it was at TRE, which stands for the running event. It's a trade show that a lot of brands go to every December in Texas. And I was introduced to Maggie just because when I was working for Altra, I was the athlete manager, and Maggie just did something pretty spectacular in Altra's, which is why we were introduced to each other. Do you mind sharing with us a little bit about what it was? I assume you remember what you just did before.
I don't actually remember, but I'm trying to think if it was like, I don't know. Was it after Brazos, Ben?
Yeah, it was after Brazos.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about what happened at Brazos Bend.
Was it the year I ran sub 15, maybe? I think, cause I did it twice in the 1 year. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Yeah, so Brazos is like super fast course in Texas by the race director Rob Goyentra Racing Over Texas, and he made it so that, you know, people can come run fast times, and also it's, you know, it's a looped course, so it's really great for your first 100 as well. I think it was originally 5 20-mile loops, but then there was like, I remember the first year I ran it, there was this one section that after rain it was like hard mud, like it was so like it was like that suck your shoe off mud, and it just slowed you down. So I think he made the course so that he wouldn't even have to worry about mud at all. And so it became like 6 or 3, whatever the number is, 16 mile loops and then something, I don't know. And so yeah, it was easy to just kind of break it down and stuff. And then it's pretty exciting because on my like last loop I went through and it was pretty close to, you know, I was like pretty much like a pipe dream to try to get, beat Nicole's time, Nicole Bitter, who had the, you know, the American trail record, which is really just something we look at here because 100 mile distance isn't in Europe as much. So yeah, she had run 14:22 at Rocky Raccoon years ago. And so I was just trying to see if I could get as close to that as possible. And it got a little hairy and I slowed down and fell off, but I think I ran 14:47, which is funny because then we called Tracy Falbo right after because she had just run Tunnel Hill a couple months ago, maybe a month prior, and ran 14:45. And I was trying to see if I'd maybe beat her, and I had not. So we literally called her as soon as I was done.
Wait, I thought you beat Nicole's time. You didn't end up beating her time?
No. Did you? Yeah, you guys let me on the team, and you probably thought that they beat her time.
Oh man.
Yeah. No, she's still, I don't think anyone's really like beat it. I mean, Camille, so people can argue about the Tunnel Hill thing, whether it's trail or not, but whatever. Right. So I mean, in that sense, yeah, it's been beaten. But I mean, on like a trail, Nicole still has like 14:22 has not been surpassed.
Okay, cool. So that was your first 100, or you came back and it ended up being your second 100?
Oh no. Yeah, I had a bunch of hundreds before that. This is like a very gradual progression of of like a 26-hour one and a 22-hour one and then so on.
Okay, you just made the comment about being good for a first 100, but you were just saying in general it's a good
Yeah, course. In general. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Sorry for that. Okay, so yeah, we meet, you join Ultra just after that stellar performance, and then either that following year or the year after, you go to Western States, right?
Yeah, I think it was the year after.
Yeah, the year after.
Yeah, it all blurs together.
Yeah, you have quite a career, so I can understand.
Old. I just don't remember these things.
Well, you're still rocking it. So yeah, that Western States that you went to the first time, how did that go?
It was good. I trained my ass off and like, I mean, it was just unreal. Like I actually, so when I went to States, I was like, okay, I feel like I can get top 10, you know, cause like I felt like I knew kind of what people have done in the past and like kind of how, what you had to run and stuff. Now I think my time wouldn't even get you top 10, but like, it also depends on the year and the weather. But, the big question mark for me was like, could I get a golden ticket? And so I went to Georgia Death Race, which is super hard, like one of the longer qualifiers. It was like, I don't know, whatever distance he says it is like 70 something miles. And there's some really good runners there. And I ran with like Jen Benna and Bethany Patterson, like most of the way. And then it became a race and I got lucky enough to get second. And so Bethany and I went to Western States, and once again, I was chasing Bethany the whole time. Nice. I swear I was going to catch her, and I never did. So I think she ended up seventh, and I was eighth, and it was fun. So, but it was a really cool day because, like, my coworkers from Nathan came to crew me, and they had a really good time, and it was, like, really super cool to have them there, and it was an awesome experience.
And I love how casually you were just like, yeah, I think I came in eighth. Like that's kind of a big deal regardless of if you think that the speed couldn't get you a top 10 anymore. Like you still got top 10 at Western States, which is incredible. What was your final finish time?
Honestly, don't remember. I don't want to say the wrong time though too. I think it was just under 21 hours maybe. 20 something. I'm not sure. Honestly don't know.
I think that could still get you a top 10. Under 21.
Yeah. It's a super competitive race and like everyone's just getting faster and
it's true.
And yeah, but it's cool. Like, yeah, that was awesome. It's just so crazy because like you hear about this race, obviously you started running and one of the first races you hear about and you know, you're running it and you're thinking like, oh, like I got a golden ticket to get here. Like what a cool thing. And you're running and then you get to mile, like it's that first crazy aid station at like 24 something, dusty corners maybe.
Yeah.
And you're like, it's so silent, peaceful. You're just chatting with runners or you're by yourself, whatever. And then you get to that aid station and it's like, whoa, and it's so crazy. And you're like, not ready for it. And I was like freaking out because like my crew wasn't there. Oh yeah. Ryan crewed me actually Rob was supposed to be there, but they had a family emergency. So he had to leave, Rob Goyen.
Uh-huh.
And so it was him and like our friend Edward and Connie Gardner and they like weren't there. And I was like panicking and then I saw Pam Smith and she's like, okay, what do you need? So it was really cool because like Pam has won it 1 year.
Uh-huh.
And she's also like been my idol. I fangirled her once when I met her at Rocky Raccoon and she's like helping me at Western States. So that's it was like incredible. A super cool moment. And like, you know, you're running and you're just like, whoa, so much like history here. And it's just like such a cool race. Like, I don't know. I hope everyone gets to run it eventually. I know people try and
yeah, that's a tall lottery.
Yeah.
Yeah. So would you say everything clicked for you at that race?
Yeah, it went really well. I didn't have any nausea and like we did a really good job staying cool. I did the cotton shirt thing. I felt like I ran, you know, pretty hard the whole time. You know, you always wonder, oh, what if I started faster? Could I have like kind of made up some more time? But you never know. Like, I don't know. Yeah, and usually it was a good, pretty good finisher. And usually me starting fast doesn't really work out for me. So, you know, every once in a while I give it a try, but.
Unless you're like Jim Walmsley or someone like that, I don't think starting out fast usually works for most people.
It doesn't. Know. Yeah. It just, unless you're fast and just stay fast or something.
Yeah. So, most of the people listening should know what Western States is, but just in case there isn't, you got in the top 10 at Western States, and Western States is like one of the most prestigious races in the country. Top 10 get an automatic entry into next year's race, which is kind of a big deal because thousands of people apply and a couple hundred get picked every year. So unless you get top 10, the chances of you getting drawn to get into the race are pretty small. So Maggie secured herself an entry into the following year, which was 2017, if I remember right. The following year was 2017. And right now I'm on Maggie's website, her blog website, which is magatron.com with two G's. And I'm on her blog about the following year at Western States. And the title of the blog is The Fall of F8, which means female eight. And then under the picture of her, it says burn the boats, but not while you're still in them. obviously know what happened because I was there and we talked afterwards, but just by looking at those titles, it's kind of easy to think that something didn't go right. So going into Western States 2017, what were you thinking? How were you feeling? And then where did it go wrong?
Well, it was pretty chaotic, stressful period because like, I was moving around that time and, I don't know, even if it's just like a short move within town or whatever, I don't care what anyone says, moving's always stressful. And then there was stuff going on with work. We had gotten bought by another company and like, it was just like really crazy time. And we for a while thought we were all gonna get fired. So it was just like really stressful. So, I mean, I trained as hard as I could. And like, I think I was just broken down. And honestly, like, I think for those 2 years prior, I had really big goals and I did a lot and there was literally no downtime. There was train and then recover and train and then recover and train. And like, there was no break. Like, you know, sports have off seasons and like ultra runners can easily just run year round if they want to. And so like, I just got burnt out. I didn't even like running anymore. Like after that, I was just like, this is stupid. But anyway, I think that just like all caught up with me. And like, you know, I was struggling at like mile 20 something. It was just like a slog.
That same age.
But Rob Goyen came back to crew me, and he was on one of our crews. He was able to stay for the race this time, like no family emergencies. And he came up like, I don't know, he was saying burn your boats at, and he uses a lot of curse words I won't on your blog, but like he's like, burn the boats like at Brazos, meaning just like put it all out there, just burn them and like just do it. And you know, so I feel like he said at some point like after the race or during, like, yeah, you're supposed to burn like the boat, but not while you're still in it. Like it was just a shit show. Like I just like death marked. I felt so bad for my crew. Like I was like, you guys can just leave. Like, I'm just going to finish. Cause like also with Western States, I couldn't really, there wasn't any like injury. It was just going so slow. I had no energy. Like it was a slog. And I didn't see like that I had a good reason to DNF, and it's an honor to be able to run it. And so I was like, I can't DNF. I have to finish. And so I was like, this sucks. And so like my crew, like, Leah and Ralph were two of my pacers. They had to like walk with me all night. I was like, oh my God. But I remember like as the sun was coming up, getting to Hal Corner's aid station, and his like big white smile is there, and he has like coffee. And I was like, oh my God, yes, this is the best. Cause like, I was just like, yeah, you made it through the night and you're just like, finally, I'll at least get here this day. But it's funny, you walk into the aid station and like people figure out your bib number and they're like, oh, good for you. They're like all the way back there. And you have like the F8 bib on. You're like, thanks. it was fun though. Yeah, I'm like, you know, whatever. I was like, we're all the same, you know?
Yeah.
It's cool though. Well, it wasn't cool for him too, but I was leapfrogging with John Fegavarese. He's a Barkley finisher and a really good runner. And he had a terrible time too. And we kept seeing each other all night. And like, you know, I think he ended up beating bit, but it's misery.
Oh man. So I'm looking at your picture right now on your blog of you like going to the finish line, and it says 27 hours, 22 minutes and 8 seconds. So a few seconds after that, you cross the finish line. So this is like 7-ish hours slower than what you did the year before. I'm curious to know, and this could be like a double, like, this question might be hard to answer, but like, I'm sure I know the answer, but what did you, like, comparing the two finishes, would you say that even though you had a terrible race, that that finish felt better than the one before that where you did better?
Not at the time, but I'm really glad that I finished. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, it taught me, like, you know, maybe you, so in a way, like, there's certain races that speak to me and that are a challenge and I want to keep coming back. I came back to Western States because I thought maybe I could do better. But at the same time, I was like, oh, there's all these other races. But I felt like because I had this spot, I should run it. And like, then I kind of decided after that like, I was like, oh, maybe I should just really honestly do some like soul searching. Like, is this really what you want to be doing? Or is it what you think people want you to do? Like,
yeah,
you know, go to Western States or something. And so maybe that was part of it. But like, I mean, I'm obviously like one of my other big finishes that I love is like Run Rabbit Run, which was like just under 30 hours, which is the cutoff if you sign up as a hare. And that was the year I ran with Courtney for a quarter mile. And that was 2017 as well. That was that September. Like every race was like, oh, I beat. So that 27 hour finish was my longest 100. And then I surpassed that at Run Rabbit in September by doing 29 and a half hours.
Run Rabbit's so harder though, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I mean, I was throwing up from like mile 13, and like my friends, Dave Wiskowski and Amanda Basham helped me crewed me, and they wouldn't let me quit at 40. I'm like, well, this is a really long way to just like death march. Like, oh my God. But they wouldn't let me quit. And I'm glad they didn't, because like, you know, it's good to have a Hard Rock qualifier. And, you know, I was living in Pennsylvania at the time, and it's a high race. It's hard coming from sea level. But so it's funny, that's the first time I met Courtney in person, because we'd been chatting on social media for a while, just sharing advice. I don't know what advice I gave her, but we just chat. Sure. And she's like, come with me, run. And I ran with her like quarter mile, half a mile. I was like, yeah, okay, go. So she went to run with Michelle. And so she got first that year, and I got last, so.
That does not matter at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, sorry, I kind of lost my train of thought. I haven't had that happen yet.
Yeah, well, that's because I jumped ahead to September after Western State. Let's just get over this Western State thing.
Well, as a podcast host, I'm supposed to be able to go with the flow, so that's kind of on me, even if you did jump ahead. So yeah, Run Rabbit Run. I mean, I guess I didn't realize that that's when you first met Courtney. The way that you would see you two right now, I feel like you guys have been best friends for years. So that's kind of cool.
Well, I mean, that was 3 years ago, but yeah, it's cool that we live near each other now too, because we get to do more adventures and stuff, but.
But still 6 hours away.
Yeah, she spends a lot of time in Leadville, so we'll meet there and stuff, but yeah, it's still 6 hours away.
Okay, cool. Cool. So yeah, so Run Rabbit Run, Western States, both in 2017. And was it in 2018 when you first attempted Barkley?
Yeah. I think that 2017 was like, it was like, I'm going to pick things that really speak to me. And like Barkley had always been this like thing. And I think I also did, what year did I do it? It might have been 2016 that I did the Barkley Fall Classic.
Okay.
Because I remember I skipped a year because I was like, I'm not doing five loops of this ever. And then after a year, I was like, I'm going to try it. And so, yeah, because that's like a cool race to kind of like go and see if like the Barclays for you. Yeah. So, and then 2018, yeah, I got lucky, like, and he let me in the first time. And I think I applied in just the right year where he was feeling very generous to let a lot of women in, meaning like eight instead of the six that he usually lets in.
The two extra.
So I don't know. I got lucky.
So Barkley is in April, right?
Yeah, around there. It's usually closest to April 1st weekend.
Okay. Yeah. So you have these two races, Western States, Run Rabbit Run. Things didn't go your way. Both races, you finish somewhat close to the cutoff time for the entire race. And then you soul search. And then less than a year
later. I come up with Barkley. This doesn't sound very smart. Oh, my God.
Up for the hardest race, like arguably the hardest race in the world, right? I mean, isn't that what they say?
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty. I mean, it has the lowest finish rate, I guess, unless some people want to argue that they're Barkley's. I don't know. Yeah. People make up races that are really hard, but
so it sounds like that soul searching went kind of well or kind of bad. Depends on how you look at it.
Yeah, that doesn't sound, when you put it that way, it doesn't sound very smart. I don't know. It just sounded like a cool challenge because I was like, you know what? When you're there, it feels low key, I guess. I don't know. I don't know, like the old time thing where there's no cameras, you know, got really big after that 1 year. And there are like a lot of cameras and stuff, but like it still feels like there's this like small group, and it's like, you know, you don't realize there's not like the big hype of Western States and stuff. You just show up. It's like that. That's what I mean by low key. And it's just like this mysterious thing and like this cool experience that you just want to try. And but when I agreed that I was going to go after this, I was like, well, this has to be like a long project, because like, I don't know, people go and they just think they're going to finish like. And then people go, I just want to try it. I don't know if I'll ever finish. And like, I wanted to kind of be in the middle somewhere. And so I was like, okay, this has to be like a project. Like I can't just expect to like, you know, and like people don't give up information very easily. So you do like a lot of research and like, you know, like what John Fegavaris said, like you have to sleep, eat and breathe like the Barkley race if you want to like finish. And that's what he did. And he finished his first year, but Yeah, like we had, I think that year that 2018 was one of the, I mean, people can argue, I don't know what the worst weather is. You can't really gauge the worst weather, but it was pretty bad. They said it was one of the top three worst weather years they've ever seen. You know, it was just like super cold, sleet, rains, like even snowing parts, like fog. It's terrible.
And that was the, correct me if I'm wrong, that was the year that there's that sweet picture of you, Amelia, and two other people who are like touching the fence at the same time.
Oh yeah, it was five of us. It was Jameel Curry, Amelia Boone, Johnny Burton, and Ian Keith from Ireland. Like, we all ended up together. I was with Ian Keith. We caught up to Amelia and Johnny, and then we found Jameel at the next book, looking for it in the fog, like sitting on a rock, like Yoda. I swear he was like doing this in the fog, just sitting there. And I was like, "What are you doing?" Oh, he's like, "I've been looking for it for 2 hours." I'm like, "I don't." We're like, all right, we'll all look together. And we found it pretty quickly. And then when we went down, I don't know, we lost time. And he's like, we don't have time to finish this, but we're going to finish it. Like, we're just not going to finish it in time. And we're like, well, let's do it. So it was an experience.
That's awesome. I'll have to have you send me that picture, because it's like, yeah. I mean, you can just look at all of your clothes and look at the pure exhaustion on your faces. And it was definitely, just by looking at that picture, you could tell it was kind of a harder year. So
yeah, you were covered in mud because, like, you know, like Rat Jaw is like pretty steep and it's mud. You have no traction. So you really literally had to like dig your poles in like ice picks or grab onto briars. Like, that's the only way to get up.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, it was fun and terrible. I mean, the thing is, like, the course is so hard now, like, you really need weather on your side. At least I do, to have like a hope to finish it. I mean, Jared Campbell can probably do it in crappy weather, but like, everyone else, you know, needs like a nice sunny day. And you know, it's 60-hour time limit. There's going to be a chance that one of those days or nights is going to suck.
Right. Especially in that location too.
Yeah.
So I think it's safe to say, Maggie, I mean, you had these stellar performances at Brazos, at Western States, also on the 24-hour track, or like the 24-hour team. But I think you've kind of found a special niche that you're really good at, because, I mean, I haven't done Barkley or Biggs, but it seems like they would be somewhat similar from a mental standpoint. Is that somewhat relative or not even close?
Honestly, I can't compare yet because I haven't gone far enough in Barkley, but I really, like, originally was curious about Biggs for the sleep deprivation training to get me through Barkley. And now I, like, just love Biggs and the race itself, you know? So, like, but yeah, I mean, I think about how tired I am sometimes just running the same mindless course in Biggs, and I'm like, how do you make decisions in the woods on where to go? Like, it's just hard. Like,
yeah.
So,
So just in case, Maggie, just in case some people don't, I'm sure everybody knows what Barkley and Biggs is, but could you quickly describe what Barkley and Biggs are? Just to be
Yeah. Sure. Well, so Barkley, was started by Lazarus Lake. That's his pseudonym. He's basically this hillbilly from Texas, and it started in, like, I think the 80s. It's been going on almost as long as I've been alive, I think. And it originally, the 100 miler was kind of a joke. No one actually ever attempted it, so it was like multiple loops, and they had the 100k was really just like the Barkley. And then finally this guy, I can't remember his name right now, bad Barkley trivia. Finally someone went after the 100 miler and completed it, but you know, you have a 60-hour time limit, and at that time there were probably like 9 books or something, I don't know. And the books are, you get a map, and there's no, you're basically off trail, and you have to go to each book in order. There's also written directions he gives you, because it's not like an orienteering race where you can just get there however you want. You need to follow like a set course. It's laid out for you. And you know, a lot of it's honor system, but like, people don't really cheat purposely unless they're like lost. And so you get your bib number corresponds to the page you're going to rip out of each book, and you go around the course and grab each book and come back and prove you went, and then he gives you another bib number, and you go back out and get that bit page out of your book. And I think it's up to like 13 or 14 books now, and there's only been 15 finishers ever, 15 unique finishers. A couple people have done it a few times, like Jared Campbell and Brett Mahoney. And there's never been a woman finisher, so.
Until you become the first finisher. Well,
someone will do it. There's some really tough women who have tried it, but the other thing is, like, age is, like, also a factor. Like, a lot of those women, like, you know, and you could talk to, like, some of the women who've done fun runs, like Sue Johnston and Beverly and Abs, like, they'll say, like, the, you know, as you get older, that course just really takes a toll on you, and you're just kind of like, all right. So, you know, that's why I'm just trying to stay diligent, you know, before, like, I get to my upper 40s, like 50, like, I'm not, I don't know, you know, like, it's hard on your body. The training is a lot. Every winter doing, like, these crazy vert, like, it just, so, you know, I'm just trying to, like, make it count each year. And, you know, so each year I've done it twice. I don't know if you're going to ask me this later, but I've done it twice, and I've only officially ever finished one loop. Like that time with Jamil and all them, we did two loops, but it was way over time.
Right.
So officially I have two Barkley loops total in 2 years. So I really feel like I need to do something this year, like coming up. We're all kind of we have rolled over because of COVID.
Right.
I need to, like, prove I can do a fun run at least, or I should just stop trying. Cause, like, another, just one loop isn't good enough. Like, it's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, there's only a handful of people that's ever, like, started this race. So I'm sure most of us can't even fathom. I know I can't even fathom how difficult it is. Like, you're a solid runner. So, like, hearing that it takes that much out of you to do one loop, like, makes my brain hurt, honestly.
Well, there's so many, like, aspects to it, too. Like, you could be a good runner, but you could also be, like, some people just aren't good at directions, like, you know.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, it just has to be this, like, yeah, and it's just making decisions and staying calm and, like, I don't know. So
we'll see. So that brings up a good question for me that I'm just curious about, but, like, how much running do you actually do in Barkley?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, I don't know. You have to run where you can. Like, you're downhill, you got to be running, which is basically just trying not to fall because it's very, very steep. Like, it's just crazy steep.
And it's not much of a trail, right?
Yeah, no. But when you are on a trail, you do need to run. Like, and you have to run pretty hard because, like, you just don't have time. And, you know, obviously just got up the hill is so steep, you're just hiking, but you have to be a strong hiker. So yeah, you have to pretty much run wherever you can. Yeah.
So, okay. I guess, so it's probably more than a lot of people think that you have to actually run at Barkley.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, the guys, you know, you can try. So as a, they call them virgins, like people who have never started Barkley.
Uh-huh.
They'll try to follow a veteran, and, you know, like the top fast guys, like, it's impossible to keep up with them on downhill. Like, so guys that are really good downhillers, like, you know, that's an advantage. But the other part, hard part, is when navigating downhill is a lot harder than navigating uphill. So that's where people get messed up a lot. So there's just so many things you have to be, like, on all the time, just thinking.
That's crazy, Maggie. Maggie talked me, well, I don't know if she talked me into it, but we talked a little bit, and she influenced me to apply for Barkley. I want to say I applied to do it in 2018. No, I applied to do it in, 2018. Yeah. And I was kind of devastated when I wasn't picked, but then when I just saw all the crap, all the carnage, and just seeing, like, how rough that, because that was the year that it rained a lot, the year that we were just talking about, where you finished with Jamil and Amelia and the others. So I was pretty relieved when I saw that I didn't have to go through that. And then I just haven't applied since. Like, I can say I have no interest to do that race. So it takes a special breed of runner, I feel, to want to keep coming back to that. That's pretty spectacular.
I mean, so, like, It's crazy because, like, I would feel like you're a really, really strong runner, especially at long distances, and you know sleep deprivation and you can handle it. And it's crazy because it's like now you have to be this amazing navigator who understands Barkley and, like, knows everything about it. Like, it's just so crazy. Like, it's why they're like, you know, oh, Killian should just come do it. I'm like, well, can Killian, like, navigate? I guess he can. I don't know. He's Killian. But, like, you know, they have to want to do it.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm pretty notorious for getting lost in at least two or three races a year. So I'm pretty confident that there's no way I can navigate and do well at that race. So more power to you. But moving on to Biggs. Biggs is put on by the same guy. And tell everybody who's listening what Biggs is, the style of the race.
So Biggs, I guess he got the inspiration from the Stephen King book, The Long Walk, which, if you never read it, is where they have to walk 4 miles an hour until there's, like, one person left, and then they kill the person that falls behind or whatever. So this isn't that, but you run a trail loop in his backyard, basically, that's 4.16667 miles, which he just added that little fraction to make it a even 100 every 24 hours. So you do a day loop for 12 hours on this trail, and then you switch to this boring out and back on the road in front of his house. And then you just go until, you know, there's two people left, and then either one person gives up or they both do, and then there's no winner. So there's been years with no winner.
Really?
But that's the idea. So, like, you know, there has to be one person left or there's no one.
And that, I mean, that sounds like torture. Like, you go into that and you have no idea how long you're going to be running for. There's no finish line in sight, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that seems crazy, but it also is like, I don't know. It's like where Barkley, you don't know when exactly it's going to start. You know what day, but you have a 12-hour time frame and you got to wait for him to blow the conch and let you know when it's going to start in an hour, and you don't know an hour before. That's when you know when the race starts. But this race, yeah, you don't know when it's going to end. So it's like this other kind of uncertainty. But, like, if you go into it with, like, this crazy goal where it's like, I don't really care when it ends, like, I want to get to here, and, like, it's some impossible number, then it's not that bad.
Okay, so I have a question for you about that then, but before I do, I just want to point out the reason that I said I'm confident that Maggie's going to be the first female finisher at Barkley is because she is also the first finisher. Like, she's the official first female finisher at Biggs. A year ago, she ran 253 miles.
Yes, it was 250 even. Yeah.
250. Okay. 250.
It was 60 miles. Hours. Exactly the time limit of Barkley.
Yeah, exactly. So Maggie ran 250 miles a year ago. 60 hours, and she was the last person standing, last human standing, is that what they're saying?
Yeah, last person. I think they're called last person standing races. Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, Maggie was the last person standing. She became the first female first female.
I guess, well, so they're, Katie Wright had won the New Zealand version of the backyard, and Laz says she was the first female to win that format.
Oh, okay.
I was the first person to win Biggs, and okay. So that's, like, yeah, so the big backyard is usually, now he's made it the world championship each year.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, so Maggie did that a year ago. She just did it. She ran Biggs again a week or two ago now. Had some quad issues, made it, you made it into the third day, right?
Yeah, third day into the, I made it to the second night. I only made it, like, I didn't even make it as far as I made it the first time. I think I made it 40 hours. 40? Yeah.
Yeah.
I had, like, I don't know, all kinds of crazy issues, but mainly the back of my knee was, like, buckling and super painful. And I got on the road, and then my calf was, like, almost like it was stuck in a Charlie horse, and it was, like, excruciating to run. And I just slowed down too much, so... And it's, like, crazy because, like, sometimes, like, races go so well and sometimes they just don't. So,
yeah, that's so I mean, 3 nights of running, like, so many variables, so many things that can go into that and affect how well you do. So,
yeah,
it's such an extreme sport. The question that I was going to ask you, so I mean, you, so let's ask you in relation to a year ago when you were the last person standing. When you're going into that second night, so you're like sleep deprivation plays a little bit more of a factor into your performance. You're tired. You're probably a little bit cold. You're sore. Not having like a finish line in sight, not knowing exactly how many miles you're going to go. How does that affect your motivation to like continue through the low points, the second night, and to just like, how do you zone out and just keep going when you don't know how far you're going to actually be going?
My goal is to go beyond 300 miles. So I just kept telling myself like, so I just tried to not think about like how far you weren't already in relation to your 300 mile goal, like hoping we could get there. You know, and like, I just kept that like as this very single-minded focus, like let's get there.
And so you weren't necessarily thinking about being the last person standing. You were thinking about, I want to get to 300 miles.
Yeah. And so like, yeah, I wanted to win, but like, I didn't want other people to quit before we got to the 300 miles is really what it was, like, honestly. Yeah. And I think that makes it much easier because then you're not like, oh, every time that person lines up, you're like, you know, and it just wears on you. If you have a bad lap, you're like, oh, they're looking much better. Like, you know, if you just kind of like, and I think that's how it was this year too, because like there was this team aspect and like, right. So I don't know. That's just how it helped me look at like, you know, just as like a almost like an internal goal of like, I want to get here. So it doesn't matter what happens, you know?
So when we went back, so when we go back to a year ago, when you finished, obviously you don't know what would have happened, but when you became the last person standing, could you, in that moment, did you feel you could have kept going and made it to 300?
Yeah, I do. And like everyone asked that about, Oh, how do you, like, I have no idea about the third night. I've never, but like things were going so well and my crew was so dialed. They were just like amazing. Like anything issue came up, we were like, oh, all right, this is it. And like, I didn't have any major issues. And like, yeah, I was going to be really sleepy, but also, you know, those naps, I was just like getting down, laying down. And like, I don't know if I was sleeping. Like I don't know if you've ever woken up and felt amazing, but like I didn't. You know, and you just be tired. And then my plan was like maybe the last 3 hours of the night, kind of just start doing caffeine. And then basically just trying to get yourself ready and amped for that fourth day on the trail, thinking like, okay, maybe we'll get through a fourth day. But like, I was just trying to be strategic about like caffeine. And at that point, it would have been like, no holds barred, caffeine if we need it.
I mean, that's smart. That's what I do. And I think Courtney does that as well, but like,
yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I've never done bigs. I've never done this style of, so I tried the quarantine backyard ultra earlier this year and
yeah.
I didn't make it through the first night even. but I mean, I would guess just from an outsider's perspective that like, you know, I've done races where I've had to work on my sleep deprivation, like those 200s, I went through a second night and had like 10 minutes of sleep for the entire race. At the Colorado Trail, I had like 5 hours total sleep for a week. So like the sleep deprivation I'm familiar with, but just from like a mental standpoint, it's super nice to be able to go into my tent and just be like, I'm going to lay here for an hour. Like even if I'm not going to fall asleep, I'm going to lay here for an hour and just kind of zone out, relax, let my body calm down. And it's just nice knowing that like I can set my own time to lay there and just kind of trust the process and trust that I can still get an FKT even if I'm going to lay here for an hour. Where like bigs, it's like you're going to have what, 25 minutes, 30 minutes tops to be able to lay down and eat and stretch and try
definitely
and sleep.
Don't have that. Everyone has like 15 minutes max, like 15, Courtney was like 45. Yeah. So I had the year I did it, like 13 minutes, you lay down 7, you do your stuff for 5, you get back out there.
Oh my gosh. So.
Well, so I got to hit you up for advice because I signed up for Jamil's Cocodona 250.
Next year?
Yeah, in
nice.
May.
Nice, that's awesome.
So I'm like, oh, maybe this will be more civilized. Like I'm like tired, I want to sleep for 30 minutes.
Oh, you could totally do that. I mean, I'm sure you have people barking up the tree for this opportunity, but if you need crew, I'd love to come out and help out with that.
Oh, I will take you up on that probably, because I haven't thought that far ahead, but that would be great.
Well, jot my name down. I'd love to do that if you need me.
Okay. Awesome. Yay.
So that just blows my mind. Like, you have 15 minutes to do everything you need to do and then get out and go again.
Mm-hmm. That's why, honestly, I feel like crew is so important. Like, in some races, it isn't. And like, yeah, you don't need crew to do this race. You can do it. Like, it depends on the kind of person you are. But like, I got so lucky. We were so dialed last year, and I felt like I couldn't get into a routine this year. And like, the routine is so important, and I think it makes it, I don't know, we'd have to ask my crew, but I think it makes it so much less stressful if we just get into a routine and you almost know, like, this is what happens. I lay down, then we get up, we eat, we do whatever, and that's it. And like, there doesn't have to be a lot of discussion. And like Kevin and Courtney have that going with that, because they, Kevin, crews are for everything. And also they're married, so like, they know everything about each other. Like, but like, they're just so dialed, like nothing's frantic or hurried. Like, you just calmly know, like, okay, we're gonna do this. And it's very methodical and efficient, even though like, it's not rushed. And like, I think that for me, that's important, because like, it just gets you calm to lay down and not stress about like, oh my God, I'm not falling asleep. Like,
yeah. So I would assume that, well, have you done another race since Biggs last year?
No, that Biggs last year and then Biggs this year. That's okay. Like, yeah.
Well, I mean, I can't really ask this, but I'll just say that I would assume that would make you, assuming that your crew is the same at your next race that was at Biggs, but that would probably make you guys a little bit more efficient at other races, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I had it. So we were only allowed one crew person this year, so I couldn't have Jen and Gina. And actually, Amelia had Jen. Jen's father passed away like right before this race, so she couldn't come out. And I had another friend, Otto, who crewed me at Worlds. The 24-hour race I went to in Italy, came all the way to Italy with me, and he crewed me there. But we didn't really go over my plan before, and it was like a little bit, I didn't give him any direction. Me and Courtney and Amelia all shared a tent. We made this mega tent. Cause you get these 10 by 10s and we put them all together. And I don't know. It seemed just super like disorganized. And like, I don't know. Also, I had so many issues just one after the other. And I was like, this is not clicking like it was last year. But that's just like one of those things and whatever. Honestly, I struggled with training all year, cause I had like this SI joint issue. I did the quarantine backyard thing too, and I made it 40 miles, and then I didn't run for 2 months.
Because of your back.
Yeah, like was like low back was affecting my SI joint, and then I've had asthma issues all year.
Because of the snow.
Whatever. Yeah, so like getting the volume that I wanted was not possible. So I'm wondering if maybe that's why I had so many leg issues. Like I just couldn't get that quality that I wanted, but yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Huh, well, yeah, I would assume that the next time you have like an official race that's not Biggs or Barkley, that you'll be a little bit more efficient at your crew spots. Just,
well, it'll be the Cocodona 250. So yeah.
Well, if you take me up on my offer, that puts pressure on me, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you're pretty easy to crew, probably. I mean,
I think so. I mean, Courtney and I talked about this a couple episodes ago. I'm like pretty relaxed, but I just think it was like after 4 or 5 nights of not a lot of sleep, I started to get a little snappy with my crew.
And
I felt bad about it. Like I was just, if I get too sleep deprived, I get pretty irritable. So, I mean, at most of my races, I feel like I'm pretty easy to crew, but yeah, every now and then you have moments.
Understandable. I feel like, and like I was watching Ben's updates, and he seems like a cheery like guy that probably didn't bother him. Like,
yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think they expect it. Like, I don't know. You know, who knows? Maybe Courtney's like really irritable after 5 days.
Oh, I cannot. Well, you would know. You crewed her for what was it? 3 days? 4 days?
Well, 300. She was pretty even. I mean, she was pretty tired and out of it.
Yeah.
But like, she wasn't. She didn't seem grumpy or anything.
Yeah, I couldn't see her ever grumpy.
Yeah, me neither.
Well, cool, Maggie. So I usually try to keep these podcasts like 40 minutes or so, but there was one more question I wanted to ask you. The thing that I love about your story, you have this impressive running resume. If you Google your name, I don't know, you don't have to answer this, but I don't know if you ever Google your name, but there's like a lot of links that pop up when you Google Maggie Guterl for podcasts you've been on, interviews you've had, articles written about you. So obviously, if you can Google your name and all that kind of stuff pops up, you're doing some pretty cool stuff. The thing that some also, people...
Your last name's Guterl, so it's like no one else has that name.
You're humble too, I guess. But some people might not know this about you, but you hold a full-time gig for Tailwind Nutrition. Well, I guess you said that at the start of the podcast. You work for Tailwind. So you're not just a full-time paid athlete. You're holding down a 9-to-5, basically, 5 days a week, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because people are like, oh, you're sponsored by Tailwind. I'm like, well, yeah. But they expect me to show up for 40-hour work weeks and whatnot, too.
Yeah. So, and then even before Tailwind, like when you did that sub-15 at Brazos, when you did female number 8 at Western, you were holding a full-time gig for Nathan. Oh my gosh, one of my toenails just popped off. That's a... I was like itching my toe, and then all of a sudden I felt my toenail just kind of fall off.
Which one was it?
It's my second lock. Well, it's not all the way off. It's still connected at the bottom. I hate that. I want
to
like
pull it. Oh, that's the worst. Because now you have to like pull it, which is weird.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just cut it off up to that point and just like let that little piece fall off. And
yeah, that's what I started doing too. I used to just leave it. But then there was one night I got in my silky sheets at night and it just ripped it right off. Oh my gosh, it hurts so bad. Anyway, that was super gross and distracted. Sorry about that. But yeah, even before Tailwind, you were working full-time at Nathan, right?
Yeah. Yeah, when that's how we bonded, we had the same job. I had the athlete manager job at Nathan and you were at Ultra.
Yeah. So you're doing these cool things. You're working full-time. I'm just curious to know, just to put it into perspective, like obviously this year was a little off because you said you were having some sciatic issues, but like at your Nathan years, at Tailwind before this year, and you're experiencing some injury, like what's your training like? Are you getting up super early? Are you staying out super late? How do you fit in your training for these kind of performances?
Yeah, mainly I'm much better when I get it done in the morning. Like when I was a member, the first year, when I was training for Western States, I would get up at like 4 a.m. because I also had like a long commute to get to Nathan when they were like in near Philly. And but that works for me better to get that out of the way in the morning. And then like you would do either you do a double. Also at Nathan, it was cool. We had a gym and we had a trainer come in and they would do boot camps. So I could get my strength work in at work. And then you could run after work. If you're doing a double or whatever, and then, you know, weekends or whatever.
Right. Cool. Well, I mean, you talk about that so casually, but like, I assume it's like, how daunting is it some days to like roll over and see your alarm for at 4 a.m. Like,
yeah, no, it sucks. And sometimes I'm like, I try to go off social media. Cause like, there's a lot of people that don't have jobs, like, especially even in Durango, the Durango runners, like, I'm doing it wrong that because like I'm like, what am I doing wrong? Like they're just out in the mountains and I'm at work. You're like, this sucks. And so I just go off social media because like whatever. It's everyone has their own little path. And like, you know, some days I feel bad for myself because I have to have a job. And I'm like, no, wait, I like my job. So like whatever. Yeah. And like, you know, honestly, like, I mean, you have to work really hard to like not many people have no job and can make a living at ultra running. Like,
right.
So, you know, and that's fine. But I mean, I think the majority of the people have jobs and still train for these races, like whether they're back of the pack or not. And they get up, you know, super early or like people, you know, the mystery to me is people who have kids and can do this, like, because my job is, I know it's predictable and this is what I'm going to do. You know, things happen, but whatever, like your kids, like it's 24/7. Like,
yeah.
I don't know how you do it. Like,
If having kids is like winning the lottery, me and Sarah definitely got pretty lucky, because I was just talking to Claire, I don't know how to say her last name, Shortenstein.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she does, for the listeners, Claire, she does a podcast. She's a nutritionist and does a podcast kind of about like eating for endurance. And we were talking and she was asking me about my recovery from Colorado. And I was like, yeah, I'm sleeping like 10, 11 hours a night right now, which is like ridiculous for me. I'm usually like a 6 hours a night kind of a guy and I feel great. And she is like, man, your wife must be a saint to let you sleep like that when you have kids. And I was like, well, we put our kids to bed at 7:30 every night and they sleep in until 7:30 every morning. Like, no peeps during the night. They both wake up at the same time. They're sleeping 12 hours a night. And our son's been doing that since he was a baby. Our daughter, it took a few months for her to get to that. But I mean, I can get up at, we go to bed at like 10, get up at 5:30. And then by the time I'm back at 7 or 7:30, that's when the kids are waking up. So I'm lucky that way. I know not that way for most people, but.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're like making up for all the sleep you don't get when you're like doing your runs and stuff. Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is. We have this like channel kind of going through each other somehow. Anyway, well, cool, Maggie. It was fun talking to you tonight. For the listeners, I'll put this in the show notes, but you have your website, which is magatron.com. What's your Instagram?
It's at Magatron Runs.
Magatron Runs? Okay.
Yep.
And that's with 2 G's, right?
Yep, 2 G's.
Okay. Cool. Well, I really do appreciate you coming on, Maggie. It's fun talking with you. I'd say in the running world, your name's up there quite a bit, especially after your performance at Big. So I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me and coming on the show. It's fun to catch up.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
Yeah. We'll, like I said, I'll put that in the show notes and we'll go from there. And also, before we close, I wish everybody could see the video, just because.
Oh, this is the video the whole time.
There's this creepy upside down.
This is a planter. My friend makes it. Oh, what's her Instagram?
What is it? It's a lantern.
I think it's Full Metal Jewelry is her Instagram. No, it's a planter. Like she takes these dolls, and there's like blood and safety pins on the dress, and like. The doll's holding its own head upside down, and there's a little air plant coming out of the doll's neck hole.
Can I record this on my phone just so I can like put this on my story for the show?
All right, wait.
So there's Maggie. What's her name?
I didn't name it. That's so weird. Why would I name it?
Well, I mean, it's weird that I've been looking at that for the whole show, honestly.
It is funny.
Yeah.
There's Rob Carr. In the background, that's the big, I got that from Nathan.
Oh, that's awesome.
In the Grand Canyon.
See, yeah. That's a little more respectable to be in a runner's house. But I'm also going to get one more shot of what I've been looking at the whole time. Just right there in the corner, this little doll that's head is upside down staring at Maggie. Anyway, yeah, I'll add that to my story so everybody else can see what it was. But yeah. Anyway, thanks again, Maggie. It was fun talking with you.
Thanks, Mike.
That wraps up tonight's podcast. Really appreciated Maggie Guterl giving me some of her time tonight to chat. She's such a good person, such a good athlete. I really enjoy catching up with her. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. Hope you got something out of it. You know, the biggest thing I've learned from Maggie is it's possible to do extraordinary things when you're holding down a full-time job. She has worked at Nathan, as we said. She works at Tailwind currently, and she's still getting out there, winning races, doing cool things. She's not letting the fact that she has a job stop her from doing great things. And as she said too, that's kind of the story for the majority of us. We're all trying to balance life. We're trying to balance our job, our family, trail running. just remember that it's possible to do all of that when things get hard. Just remember the love that you have for it. Remember that it's possible to do all of it. and just enjoy the process. That's the other thing that I learned from Maggie. She's such a happy person, and she just makes sure that she loves what she's doing. So thank you again, Maggie. Thank you to all of you. Growing a podcast is not easy, but it makes me happy to see that you're listening to it. So thank you. Thank you. Please keep it up. And again, one more reminder, Primal Kitchen is now a sponsor. They have a 10% off code for all of you. It is Low Carb Runner 10. Just plug that into your checkout when you're leaving the online store and you'll get 10% off your order, and enjoy some good clean food from Primal Kitchen. Thanks again, everybody.